This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about self-acceptance with Castle MacArthur. And I was so excited going into this conversation because I think it took really chatting to Castle to remind me how much he's been one of many people that I've got to see as a role model over the years when representation is something we know is so key. And I think there's such power in it in ways that we don't always acknowledge, right? That I really hope in this day and age we understand as a society how important it is for people to be able to see themselves on screen and know that quite literally at times they're growing up and the adult version of them is possible and does exist out in the world, and there's a frame of reference for who can you be. And maybe the like next victory beyond that is finding ways that representation can be aspirational and can be accessible to you, even if your identity is very different to the people you might aspire to. And so in a way that I think you'll get how Castle is someone that I connected with initially through his work, and it was so lovely to get to chat in person about this theme that can be such a difficult one to grapple with. I think self-acceptance is a lifelong journey, and it's one that I'm really glad to be where I'm at with it, but it has been hard won, and it is unfortunately ongoing work and, you know, something that comes up in therapy a lot for me. It's like there's always new ways that we can uncover, like you think you've turned over all the rocks and then you're like, oh no, there's still this one over there, that corner of it turns out I still hate myself in that way. But I guess I've got to a place where I've done enough of the overturning of rocks. I'm stretching this metaphor too far. And it doesn't feel as daunting once you've overturned enough of them. All right, now enough about rocks. So our guest, Castle MacArthur, is an incredible model, actor, activist, and his work has included campaigns with so many, I can't even name them all. He's been in a music video with Miley Cyrus. He's done work with so many makeup brands, including Urban Decay and Milk Makeup, which both of those I would totally recommend, particularly for men exploring makeup as a way to access a brand where you do actually get to see other men and like a broad range of like gender expression in the advertising. And so, yeah, endless brands he's got to work with. I also noticed just here last year, he did an interview all about diversity with Primark, which here in Ireland we call Pennies. So really the breadth of like the high street fast fashion, high-end fashion, magazines, Vogue, all of the places. And so as someone also with a background in modelling, it's great to see. I love to see other people's success in this space, particularly when we get to be ourselves, which isn't always the easiest thing in modelling, and that's very much part of the conversation today around self-acceptance and the kind of pressures externally and internally that can fuck with that, how mental health is such a big part of that process, and yet even in environments where there is such pressures on who you're expected to be, it is possible, and it's great. It's great to be yourself. I enjoy it. It's nice to even do a positive intro. I feel like some of these, when I feel the need to be, you know, most honest and share personally, it's because I'm, you know, something's coming up for me that's tricky. And actually this conversation has been the reminder that maybe I needed that, like, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'm really happy lately and I'm living a life I'm very proud of. And I don't always, here we go, here's the lesson. I don't always pause to celebrate milestones and that I am doing well. And so with that all in mind, we'll get into this uplifting conversation with Castle MacArthur in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. Hi, Bobby here. The announcement is this. I am speaking at the podcast show in London next week, and this is a totally new event, a massive podcasting conference, the scale of which has never been seen outside of the US before. So it's really exciting, and I'm so delighted to get to speak at the first one on the theme of podcast growth. If you are a podcaster of any stage, or if you're looking to get into podcasting and this might be of interest to you, definitely check out the podcast show. It's thepodcastshowlondon.com, and I'll include a link to my specific talk in the episode description today. It's on the 26th of May, so that's Thursday at 2:15 p.m. It's going to be good. There's also a Q&A bit, and there's a lot of other notable podcasters there that you'll recognise that I'm looking forward to mingling with, and who knows, see who I can connect with and maybe nudge on to be a guest on a future episode of this show. So hopefully see you there, and now on with the episode.
Thank you for having me, Bobby. I appreciate it. My name is Castle MacArthur, and let's see, thinking back on mental health and like my experience with it throughout life, you know, as a kid in public school, I didn't fit in too much. That's probably the case for a lot of kids in school. I don't think any kid feels like they fit in, but I definitely wasn't as like happy as most kids normally were. Depression does run in my family. So does things like suicide and anxiety, problems with like alcoholism. So there's always going to be these predecessors, I think, that, you know, come from your DNA, come from like your lineage. And I started modeling at a very young age when I was 10 years old. And I stopped going to public school around that time, which in turn probably saved me a lot of heartache and pain, because going through public school is not easy. I don't think going through homeschooling is easier either. But I do remember that it got to a point before I went out of public school to where I was getting into fights with these like girls that I thought were my friends, but they weren't. You know, it was very like that mean girls type thing, fake friends. I don't know. We were just kids and we were bullying each other. And instead of being like, oh, we obviously don't like each other, we were pretending to like be friends to each other's faces, and then like cause shit. Like, and this is crazy. Like, this is third grade. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, TV does like too much. Yeah. So no, it basically like I started getting into such big fights with those girls that they ended up sending us to like group counseling together at the teacher's office. And I was just like, no, like I don't want to be friends with these girls. Like, they're bullies. They're bullying me. But you know, of course, like schools are always like, well, we just need to come together and put aside our differences. And I was just like, no, fuck that. Plainly fuck that. Yeah, on top of just struggling in school, I was in special ed as a kid. So that's basically like they keep you in the same grade that you're supposed to be in, except you have separate classes away from your main class where they like teach you things to help you like read better or help you do math better. I don't necessarily think that those things like helped me. The truth of the matter is I just can't function in spaces where there's a lot going on. I have ADHD and dyslexia. So those two things make learning very difficult in spaces where like kids can't be like quiet, or teachers won't take the time to talk with you one-on-one, or when you ask questions, if a teacher is more like, you're an idiot, than like actually explaining it.
No, I relate to that a lot. Yeah, I also have dyslexia. And so I similarly, had whole parts of the curriculum they didn't really bother with for me, because it was like, okay, we need to get you reading. Let's prioritize that. And I'm really glad of it. But also I can absolutely attest to you're aware of that separateness at a young age. And no amount of like cleverly naming what grades you're in by like letters rather than numbers or things like that really makes a difference.
No, not at all. It doesn't have, no. Because kids are just, you know, they're smart. And then, yeah, kids obviously also have like opinions on other kids that are potentially in like classes like special ed. Yeah. And then I also remember there was always kids that would get to like graduate from special ed class. And I was always so upset that I couldn't like get out of it.
Wow. Yeah, that's quite strange. I've never come across that, like, and that does seem like something that would contribute to you feeling like you're failing, because there's that clear route out of it, and yet that feels inaccessible to you.
Yeah, and to this day, I have to say that I struggle, like, reading things in front of people because of it. Yeah, I think it just gave, like, a lot of, like, insecurity that wasn't needed, and surely it did, like, help me in a lot of aspects, but I think just the way that the teachers would go about it was not cute and not helpful. It always, kids, I feel like, always end up feeling like the problem. And I think, like, a lot of adults accidentally or maybe even purposefully make kids feel like they're the problem, instead of being like, oh, maybe it's my way of talking to this child that's the problem. Maybe it's my way of, like, teaching this child that's the problem.
Yeah, maybe the one size fits all approach to education doesn't really chime with the, like, we're all individual, unique beings who are capable of so much, which is said to you in school, and yet the schooling environment does not reflect that at all. It's so reliant on memorizing facts and having a, like, a baseline of certain skills, which as soon as you throw dyslexia or any number of things into the mix, that's out the window. And by comparison then, going into the working world from such a young age, where, you know, modeling can be so fun and so exciting, and I guess at that age, did it feel like really grown up, and that you had that, like, okay, school is difficult and feels punitive, and now I'm out here making money?
I mean, it was, you know, it was nice in the sense of just, like, I didn't have to deal with school. Like, I got to focus my attentions on other things, which, you know, benefited me in a lot of ways, especially as an adult. I think getting to, like, live that experience, as hard as it was good for me now. I think that's just kind of how that works.
Yeah.
Because, you know, starting modeling at a young age, I was also doing acting and singing. So when I started taking, like, acting classes, and when you have to start reading, like, scripts off the page, or, like, cold reads for auditions, that's where I really started to get super insecure and, like, stressed out to the max, because, you know, all of the previous, like, encounters that I had with reading publicly or reading to people. I also did an acting class where we had to do a scene, and the scene was, like, two characters in a spelling bee. And I had to be one of the characters in the spelling bee. And I was like, oh, shit. And then I remember, and we only had a half an hour to, like, prepare the script. And, like, it was, like, basic. I remember, like, the first, like, spelling bee word. It was banana. And I could not. I was 12 or 13. I didn't know how to spell banana, like, off the top of my head.
And I'm not confident I could now without, like, singing Gwen Stefani.
The shit is banana. Yeah, exactly. Which is, that song is what I used to teach me how to spell bananas. And I don't even think I remember that verse properly to spell the word. So that was, like, a really embarrassing moment, because I got made fun of in front of the whole acting class by the teacher. How can you be this old and not be able to spell the word banana, like, off the top of your head? And it was just the most, like, embarrassing moment ever. It didn't make me feel very confident or comfortable as an actor, like, after that. And that was, like, pretty formative years and learning time. And I think it's still, like, things that I'm learning to get past and grow past as, like, a young adult, figuring out how I can adapt, like, work, like, scripts and stuff nowadays for ways that work for me. And sometimes that just means, like, listening to a recording of lines on repeat and memorizing that way, because I can't always read things and memorize them. And if I do, I'd have to have read the thing 20 times. And maybe I can retain some of the information, but it's never going to be, like, concrete.
Yeah, I'm similar. I have to usually put things into my own words in order to memorize them, because otherwise it's, like, it's too far away from how I would say something naturally, that like, it's like remembering the words and then remembering, like, a strange kind of alien way of laying them out that doesn't feel very natural. And then I can get in my head with that. So I relate to that a lot. And you mentioned off air that there came a point through like the early days of your modeling when your mental health was also challenged as well. Could you share a bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, the modeling industry has changed quite a lot, you know, incremental changes slowly within like the last 5 years, I'd say, where like models that are under the age of 18 aren't getting hired onto agencies. That's honestly amazing. Sucks for young people that want to model, but that would have saved me so much, like as a child, to have not been put into such a intense and crazy industry. So, you know, being like a kid in the modeling industry and having to deal with the, like, you have to look like this, your measurements have to look like this, you have to be this weight, being young and going through puberty and trying to manage all of these requirements that are set for you. It's crazy how, especially in the past, like, you'd look at magazines and you'd be like, oh my God, this woman is so hot. She's so hot. She's everything. She's everything. No one's sitting back and thinking about the fact that these models are 14 years old. And no one's thinking about the fact that everybody who's idolizing their body ideals, like their fashion ideals, their look ideals, are based upon like literal children. Mm-hmm. And like, that's not healthy for adults to be like, oh, well, my hips need to be like this size to be valid. And it's like, well, this model hasn't even hit puberty yet. And when this model hits puberty, who knows what's going to happen to their career? Because, you know, at the time, fashion was not there for anybody bigger than 25 inches in the hips, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having to like battle that as a child was really, really hard. Having to work with a personal trainer 6 days a week, 3 hours a day for like years, just to have like this perfect body that never even got to the point of perfection that was needed for, say, like couture modeling or being able to work in like Europe and stuff in Paris. So basically what I'm saying is I developed horrible eating disorders and like binging disorders, mm-hmm. like horrible depression. I was like lashing out at myself, hurting myself, like for any like form of like control that I could have, because I was controlled by adults and everything had to be perfect. I remember being like a young kid and I was taking MMA classes to like fight because I liked being strong. And I liked fighting. I wanted to be able to protect myself. And I had to stop taking MMA classes because my legs got too strong for modeling. And they were just like, your legs are too strong. Like, you look too thick. You have to stop working out. Like, you have to stop building muscle because your legs don't look good. So that's really aggravating because you're like, I'm literally doing this healthy fucking thing and I'm building muscle yeah. and I'm eating and I don't look good, like, you're going to sit there and tell me that I look too thick. That's just ridiculous. Also to say that to, like, a 12, 13-year-old is... But that's just how the industry always has been. And it's changing a lot now, and there's a lot more diversity in all aspects of modeling. But it still has a long ways to go, and there's still so much toxicity that lives within the industry. You know, it wasn't like... Eating disorders were completely normalized. And even now, I'd say that in modeling, it's still completely normal for models to have eating disorders. And it's almost like if you don't have an eating disorder, what's wrong with you? Like, you're not serious enough about your career. So those types yeah. of things.
It's scary. It's so much to hear. And I agree with so much of it. I also do modeling, but I didn't start until... See, now we run into my memory issues. I think I was over 18, or if I wasn't, I was close to it. And so I can say 100%, if I'd started younger, it would have been so harmful for me. And the agency I'm signed to, I used to be involved in like recruiting models and getting them trained up as well. And, you know, the amount of them that were actually, if I'm really honest, quite triggering to work with at times, because there might be certain things that I'd work through, but then I can see someone coming into the industry for so many of the wrong reasons and looking for self-acceptance via the external validation of this incredibly like critical, mm-hmm. narrow-minded view of what beauty is that's ever-changing. Yeah. It's something I can have mixed feelings on, because on one hand, I love modelling and I've been very lucky with a lot of my experiences. But absolutely, I've seen so many examples of what you're describing. And yeah, things are changing, but it's such a reflection of society as well, that this stuff has gone on unchallenged for so long that it is so normalized. And, you know, I've told a story before on the podcast about a friend of mine that did an ad for a massive hair care brand where they had to dye her roots grey to then colour them over for a TV ad for a new, like, root touch-up product. And she was 16 at the time. And so the implication of the ad then is you have this one touch-up product and then you're going to look like this 16-year-old who clearly was never going grey in the first place. And yet we're fed this stuff so constantly. I sometimes wonder, is it possible to have a complete absence of body dysmorphia? You know, not like to the diagnosable level, but do all of us end up with bits of it because of the media that's pushed on us?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, just thinking about any conversation I have with like any given person, it's very like clear to me that society has a lot to do with it. How our family raises us is a lot to do with it. How our friends, the type of conversations that are had around you, the type of conversations that you're having with yourself, like how your parents speak to themselves is also how you're going to speak to yourself as you grow. And it's just sad. And it does seem, at the end of the day, everybody's just trying to find that self-validation. And they think that they can find it in all these ways that media has like convinced us that we want, convinced us to like be perfect in this way or that way. But gradually what I'm finding for myself and in my life, and obviously like through therapy and stuff, the only acceptance that's truly worthwhile in life is the one that you find from yourself, like within your heart. And that's probably very Disney princess type way to go about saying that. But my journey to self-love has been very like long.
Yeah. But you know what? I do totally agree with you. And I think it's both the most difficult form of acceptance, actually, is like truly accepting us and all the complexities and all the levels of how well we can know ourselves and how much of that stuff that we can dislike and often be encouraged to dislike externally because it helps sell us products or any number of other reasons. And yet, whilst it's such a difficult form of acceptance, I do think it's the most reliable because you are the one that's ultimately in control of it. And I think there's certain steps that you can get to, certain parts of yourself that once you've really accepted them, it's very difficult for anyone to fuck with that. You know, that's something that I think we're all trying to do. Like when you were describing how people are trying to find what acceptance is for them, I was thinking about how, like, the phrase that came up in my head is that we're all trying to find who we are and if that's okay. And so for you, I've got a two-part question now. So you'd mentioned about like your experience of eating disorders and around depression. And so was that something that you saw any elements looking back before modelling? And also when you did come to be more aware of those things, at what points were you able to get help?
Mm-hmm. I guess, you know, it's hard to look back past the age of 10 and be like, oh, like these things, you know, existed or I noticed them, because I kind of just feel like some of those things may have just been things that have always existed. You know, I know that my mom struggles a lot with mental health. So I know that even from like a young age, there was probably things there embedded in me that, you know, just existed without like the help of modeling, bringing it out, or the help of like working young. The journey to like self-care has been a very long one. And I'd say like within the last like few years, I've really been taking it seriously. To whereas, you know, when I was younger and going through the motions, it was controlled, like always a controlled environment, always like the opinions of other people. As I started growing up and I started realizing that on top of body dysmorphia, I have gender dysphoria. and I was suffering from gender dysphoria. And I started realizing my gender identity when I was 13 years old, which is like before I was able to tell people about it, before I was able to open up dialogue about it. The modeling, and for me, and getting older in it, growing up into it, as I started turning like 14, 15, and 16, things had started getting so serious. And I started going into this fear mode of, oh my God, I'm literally going to become a person that I didn't like sign up for. I'm going to be this person that everybody else told me I was going to be, but I don't even feel attached to that person. Like, I don't even know who that person is. I don't even want to be her. And it literally just got to the point where I was like, I will never model again unless I can be a male model. And, you know, that was it for me. And for like everybody in my life that was a part of my career at the time, I was like, either this is happening or it's not happening at all. But, you know, under the layers of what was going on, it was, this has to happen or I will be dead. I will not make it to 18 years old when I've already tried. And, you know, also during that time, going through like mental hospitals, like lockdowns and stuff, there was so much going on. And all I wanted was to just like be heard and be accepted. So that was always rough. And then I also just didn't know if there was even a place for me in the modeling world as a male model, as a trans person. From that standpoint, I literally had to give up on my dream to actualize the person I wanted to be. And I'm very lucky and very happy that I get to be who I am and still get to follow my dream. And now I get to follow it in a healthy way. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean I'm still not dealing with all of the baggage from the past. I couldn't live a lie.
Yeah.
It was killing me. And, you know, I feel like there's two feelings that I feel when I say something like that. I feel very proud of myself for having the, like, power to push through, like, everything that was literally preventing me from being who I wanted to be and being me on my own terms. But then I also understand like the privilege that I have in that just as well. Like I was able to start hormones at 16 years old because I had an agency and an agent that was like, yes, I will represent you as a male model. Without somebody saying that, I would have not been on testosterone until like I could have legally done that for myself. So that was like a privilege in and of itself, having somebody see me, see what I want and give me the means to get that. Like I had people on my side. I'm very lucky for like the position that I was in. I know that that's not the case for a lot of people. And I know a lot of people are forced to live in an existence in a way that they do not feel right in this world. And that is heartbreaking because that kills people. That's mm-hmm. like the NHS making trans people wait 6 to 7 years just to potentially see an endocrinologist to maybe get gender affirming care in any fucking way. Like if somebody told me I had to wait 6 years from when I was already at the peak of killing myself, it doesn't work like that. Like you only have the moment in which you're feeling. You can't think about the future. I'm 23 years old right now, and I feel like I'm running around like a chicken with its head cut off because I didn't prepare. I didn't prepare for this because I truly didn't see a life to 18 or anything past. And every year past that, I'm just like, whoa, okay, fuck. I got, what do I do? But, you know, that's also like the beauty of it. You don't have to know what to do. Mm-hmm. Just kind of have to get through it. I don't know, live and find like the moments as you get there.
Yeah.
I don't do much future planning.
But that is so interesting what you shared there. And it's so broad, you know, so many people I think can relate to that experience of figuring out as we go along. I think that's what all of us are doing. I don't think any of us are prepared for adulthood. And I don't really think that's part of the process. I don't think whatever household you come from, whatever identity you have, I don't think there's a version of it where you get to adulthood and you're like, okay, I'm 18 now, I'm an adult, I'm ready, this feels real. I think there are a lot of people like decades later still looking at their life and being like, huh, I don't feel like I'm a grown up yet. And yet all of this environment seems to say that I am. I'm also really glad to hear that you were able to, you know, go through your transition with the support of those around you professionally, because I can absolutely see that being the opposite. And I've known of cases like that. And you had grown up with so much scrutiny over your body and your appearance being really the main way that, that most people interacted with you. And so whilst there's so much additional pressures you faced with that, it would have been just how many times more dangerous if the people around you or family or friends or whoever else had been like, no, you've got to stay this way. That's your only option. You can't mm-hmm. throw all this you've created away. And yet, I think you were going through that at a time when that probably was most people's experience. And you got to be the trailblazer when there weren't examples of trans models that were successful. Mm-hmm. Or if there were, they weren't able to be public about their journey mm-hmm. to where they are.
Yeah. I mean, I remember just like looking and searching. I was searching for other like male models that were trans men and just seeing if I, you know, could even see if it was like possible. But I would only see male models that were trans in like bodybuilding. So nothing in high fashion, nothing in what my heart is in, mm-hmm. which is high fashion, editorial, like the real like arts aspect of it. So that was like disheartening, but I'm really happy that, you know, I'm able to use like my body and my image in a way that is actually like impactful and hopefully impactful to youth, and not just impactful to youth, but people in general.
I'd say so. I think you certainly are. The first time I actually came across your work was a campaign you did with Milk, and they were only in the States at the time. So it was like a fairly new brand. It was certainly a very new brand to me. Mm-hmm. And it was really empowering, even as someone that's not trans, even as someone that, you know, was living so far away and, you know, has had a lot of different life experiences to you, to see someone there in modelling that was getting to really be themselves and getting to put who you are so at the forefront of that campaign, when so often the expectation is that we are treated like props. And that's why, similarly, the jobs I like to do are the editorial ones. The places I like to be in the industry are where I get to be distinctive, as opposed to, oh, you happen to have certain measurements and therefore you're allowed on a catwalk.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you for telling me that. That's so sweet. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. And I mean, it's only that I've come across your work so many times since then that we've got to talk today. So you're out there. You're doing the thing. It's great to see.
Thank you. I will continue to keep doing the thing and doing my best and hopefully just uplifting people. I would say that this journey now in my modeling career, well, when I first started transitioning, like medically, I was really just trying to be like what society expects out of men. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I like found myself and grew into myself more, you know, top surgery for me was very gender affirming. Like that's when I fell in love with the color pink again. I always hated the color pink, obviously, because of how society genders the colors pink and blue. So I hated the color pink because it was feminine and it was girly and I didn't want to be any of that. But what I realized is that I had a lot of built up toxic masculinity mm-hmm. from living in a patriarchal society, as we all do. And we all develop these like very toxic ways of talking to ourselves, controlling ourselves.
Well, that's a bit nobody tells you. You don't have to be born male to have toxic masculinity to internalize misogyny. It's so out there and mm-hmm. it's so easy to internalize. I realized not even that long ago that my favorite color had changed. I'd kind of forgotten about it, that my favorite color used to be red when I was little. And at a certain point, and I don't know when that was, it was then blue. It's not something I thought about until a little while ago. And even that, I wonder how much of that could be related to the gendering of colours. That, like, why did it change? Mm-hmm. And why did it end up changing to the stereotypical boy colour? So I've been, like, wearing more red again. I mean, like, I'm reclaiming it. Maybe that wasn't the cause. But I do love that colour. What happened to red?
Yeah, exactly. What happened? Where did she go? Like, yeah. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, gender, like, putting gender on any color is just stupid. Like, blue is a feminine color and pink is a masculine color, vice versa. Like, colors are just colors. They're whatever you want them to be. Pink is the color of self-love. And I find it very charming that when I truly started to love myself is when I started to love the color pink. And now I don't know, like, it, that color just makes me so happy. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel like self-love and love. Just to look at it, it's comforting. And I think that's just what a favorite color should do, is bring you comfort, no matter what color it is.
Yeah, for sure. And I interrupted your flow earlier, but you were talking about when you were first medically transitioning and around having your top surgery, you were feeling a lot of the pressure to present in, like, this narrower, stereotypical male way.
Right. And that was also the expectation of fashion. So now I had entered a new realm of control. Mm-hmm. So it was great because, you know, I didn't have to be a girl and I didn't have to live up to the standards of woman. But now I had to live up to these standards of male models. And, you know, that wasn't entirely fair to me as a trans man because I'm not a cis man. I don't have the natural, like, muscle tones that, like, cis men do. Like, I'm just in a, what I realize as a model, a male model, I'm in a very interesting category of, like, body that doesn't really fit what men's bodies are in modeling, which is either, like, super, super frail, like, skinny editorial boy, or, like, super butch, like, swimsuit model, body model. Mm-hmm. I'm not really either one of those models, kind of like my own. And having to navigate that and find that power within myself, and to also make people understand, like, you're not going to get a rippling six pack out of me. And you're also not going to get me, like, completely fucking hairless, because I am a man chock full of testosterone. I am covered in body hair. And even body hair is, like, controlled on male models in modeling, which I find to be completely ridiculous. I don't think body hair should be controlled on any model whatsoever. And then also just, yeah, people's assumption of trans men needing to be masculine, to be what they expect out of men, to have, like, I don't know.
It's I was so struggling. Strange. Yeah, it's like the strangest play pretend as well, the whole hair thing, that you're being pushed out there in a way that isn't actually how your body organically looks. And then people are observing this and feeling bad about how their body naturally looks. And it's mm-hmm. just so fake and so ridiculous. And I think particularly certain things like women having these expectations to shave their legs, as if, like, we're all buying into the idea that women don't have leg hair. And somehow, like, that's just gone along with, you know, broadly. Like, obviously, people do challenge it, but it is quite unchallenged in mainstream media, to the point where, like, it does get an article in, like, trash magazines if a female celebrity is on holiday and they've not shaved that day and the paparazzi mm-hmm. happen to get to them, that somehow is still a news story.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's so archaic, and I feel like we have so many better things to focus on. If it's not, like, liberating body hair, we have so many other things to focus on mm-hmm. in life. I mean, I had even done a photo shoot for Pride, and, you know, I had done this photo shoot, it was a Pride campaign, and they were just like, oh, well, we were expecting you to look like this, not this. And I'm like, the photo that you're showing me is from 3 years ago. I'm 3 years more on testosterone now than I was then. And basically, they just had a problem with, like, my body hair. Like, I had way too much chest hair for them, and they wanted me to shave it off. And I was like, this is a Pride, a trans Pride campaign, and you want your trans male model to shave off their body hair, their gender-affirming body hair. Those types of things to me just are so frustrating, but it's like fashion can't get their head around their ego.
Yeah.
They can't, like, they can't. They're just like, no. But it's like, no, like, if you're celebrating trans bodies, like, truly celebrate trans bodies. And honestly, just celebrate bodies in general. Like, and also, I think finding the love and acceptance for my body hair has been a really long journey. Because I'm in, like, modeling, because I always see male models that have similar body types to me, but they're fucking hairless, and they get more jobs because of it, but that's just, like, it's not conducive to how my body grows hair, and I had to learn how to, like, love that and find the beauty in that, not for anybody else or anybody's comfortability, and people can make me insecure and make me second-guess that, but it's never going to be enough to where I go in and nair off my whole chest and then have to deal with all of the ingrown hairs that come with it, all of, like, the rashing and, like, itchiness. Like, it's just, these things aren't conducive. I wish people would just get them out of their fucking brain. That's what I'm trying to do as a male model now, is just break down, like, toxic femininity and toxic masculinity, and how can we just, like, love and appreciate people for who they are without projecting, like, onto them. I have so many people tell me all the time, you'd look so much more beautiful if you just shaved off all your body hair and plucked out your unibrow. And I'm like, I'm beautiful right now. There's...
Well, that's it. Beautiful, like, to who? Like, why exactly, do strangers to get them. To have such yeah. power in that way? And
yeah,
that's something that, by the time I'd come across your work, you had got to that place of, like, yeah, going with certain, like, stereotypes of and expectations of how you should look as a male model, and then at that point, you know, I saw you through a makeup campaign, and that was really moving to me, to see someone, you know, that had fought so hard to be male and was still fighting for your distinct approach to gender. And, you know, that kind of nuance is something that I think the world does really need to catch up on. You know, I've talked about before, like, there's such an expectation around, like, non-binary identities, for example, that you should look androgynous to make it easier for people, as if that's your problem, that you've got to put the whole world at ease. And, you know, for you, you've got to only present it a certain way to put the whole world at ease. Whereas the true reality is, you know, I can attest to that personally. Whatever your identity is, it's empowering to see people be themselves and be loved and upheld for that. And so the fight that you're doing is the universal fight to take down, like, narrow ideas of gender that are harmful to people. The same stuff that is boys don't cry, the same stuff that holds men back from getting mental health support, the same stuff that makes people feel that we've got to live these narrow lives. And, you know, at times I wonder how much people would challenge and question in themselves if they felt able to. And maybe sometimes it is realizing that the body you were born into isn't the one for you, isn't the gender you feel. It can take something as monumental as that to make the pain and the hurt and the work of dismantling gender stereotypes feel worth it. And as long as that's a such part of the reality, that's dangerous for all of us, because we should all be able to question it. It shouldn't be so difficult. Yeah. And I guess it's not even just the questions, it's the answers. It's the realizing how much of this stuff is complete BS and yet is also widespread and is also normalized. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How would you feel if I read a quote of yours back to you?
Okay. Let's see what Past Castle had to say.
You can tell me if it sounds acceptable in my voice. So you mentioned something that I think encapsulates a lot of this. I think that transgender or not, everybody goes through a point in their lives where they need to transition into the person they need to be. To become that person, you have to sacrifice a lot. And you have to do a lot of scary things to get over that hump. Once you're over that hump, you can do anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's still a completely valid thing. I was actually going to, like, say that earlier today, because it's still something that I live by. I think that irregardless if you are a queer person, irregardless if you have a trans identity identity or not, irregardless of who you are and what you feel like, every single person comes to a point of transition in their life. And it's a transition into who you really are. And you can always fight that. You can do whatever you want with that. But to just know that every single person is going to go through this in whatever that means to them and however that feels for them, it's all a point of transition. We are all just growing and we're just learning. As long as you can give yourself grace and be kind to others and give them grace while they're doing the same thing, you know, I think we can all end up in a much better place. And I think once you get to a place of self-acceptance, you know, it's not right away, but growing into that makes you feel so much better, way more alive, happy. Your life isn't decided for you the moment you're born. It's not, you know, I think we have a lot more control than we realize. And, you know, a lot of it's not easy. If you've lived a whole life one certain way and people expect something out of you, it's not easy to change it because first and foremost, you're comfortable. Even if you're not comfortable, you're comfortable. And to push yourself out of comfort zones to find the new comfort, you know, you have to be uncomfortable first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I relate to that a lot. And, you know, something that's taken me a while to get to, and as such I've never really articulated it publicly before, is I think that my sort of parallel fight is to be neutral. You know, whether that's talking about like mental health stigma, whether that's to do with like dyslexia, whether that's to do with wanting to present gender in a broad way, whether it's sexuality stuff, all of this is just me and is my normality. And that I love talking about mental health and I love like sharing my perspective on it. And it's strange at times when, and of course it does come up through modeling as well, when people can get distracted by how you look as opposed to who you are and what you think. And I do feel like we're getting to a world where more people can be neutral, where this narrow idea of what is like human normal is expanded to include the rest of the humans, because we're all, you know, living our own normality and it can feel crazy and mental illness is so much to go through, but that can also be a part of who we are and it can be okay, as we know, to struggle, to figure yourself out and then realize there's an even truer version of that and figure yourself out more, to go to therapy, to really, you know, have to find yourself even though you've been here the whole time. And, you know, that's the stuff that's so common. Why isn't that the norm? Because I think it is. So that's that's the thought I've been having lately, and that I think that I'm right on. And I want the world to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I don't know, talking about therapy to somebody that's not like for therapy, or like talking to somebody, you know, I don't know. I had somebody in my life who would always like talk about therapy and would talk about like, I think I need therapy. And then I was just like, word, you should do that if you have the means to do it. I think therapy is a great thing. You should definitely go for that. But then watching people get stuck on the, but I don't actually need it. It's so crazy because I feel like people can still be super aware about like how therapy can help them, but there's still so much like societal hangups like around it to where people don't actually like approach it. I don't know. I wish it was easier to convince people to take care of their mental health. And I've noticed that this thought pattern has mostly come from friends that are assigned male at birth and identify as male. That there's such a strong like disinterest and distrust towards like therapy or self-help, anything. I'm just like, why?
Yeah.
And I guess that's just...
And a lot of it is stigma. A lot of it is society. A lot of it is how scary it can be to look at certain things that we've maybe been avoiding because we know there's a lot of work there, because there might be a lot of trauma there. And yet, you know, I can certainly speak from my own experience. It's felt so worth it. And we, you know, we were talking off air about like our experiences with therapy. And, you know, I can tell that that's something that's very normal for you to talk about. And I guess that's another example of like human neutrality. Like I will not, at this point in my life, avoid talking about therapy. I mention my therapist all the time. She's wonderful. She's a main character in my life. It would feel very surreal to leave her out of, you know, a conversation. Like, you know, we checked in before we started about how our days have been, and you mentioned going to therapy earlier. And for a lot of people, that might feel very radical that you mentioned that. And yet, of course, like that's that's the reality. That's our lives. That's a thing that happens on certain days. And so, yeah, it's nice to be that person that gets to kind of bring in a new perspective for people. But I guess I still find it strange at times when people react to me with a lot of questions and I don't necessarily have answers that interest them at times, that satiate them, because they're expecting like a whole story. And sometimes it's like,
yeah, exactly. Especially when you tell them you're going to therapy, they're like, oh my God, what happened? You're like, I was born. Like,
I wonder sometimes what answer do you want? Did you want me to have been hit by a car and then I have 6 weeks of therapy and then I stop? Like, would that make more sense to you? And maybe it would, because that might align more with how people perceive healthcare via the bias towards physical health rather than mental health. I don't know. But I'm looking at the time and I'm realizing we could easily chat all day. So we'll start wrapping up.
Oh, yeah.
And so just to round up on the topic then, so self-acceptance, to what extent do you feel that now?
To what extent do I feel self-acceptance now? Well, you know, as a human being that goes through like the ebbs and flows and consistent ups and downs, I would have to say that I'm very happy and I'm proud and I feel good. And I'm learning how to like take care of myself and like love myself. I've finally gotten to a point in my mental health and like sense of self-care to where I'm not afraid to eat the food that I want to eat. Like I've been reprogramming my relationships with food and like the things that I consume and literally letting myself eat what I want in the moment of when I want it. And then, you know, still being mindful for like my job, I still have to like be mindful in that sense, but not like restricting myself. Cause I feel like if I let myself stay in a stasis of stress, and if I let myself stay in a stasis where I am mad at myself or frustrated with myself, or I don't like how I'm looking, I will spiral with that. And then that is physically going to show up on my body. And the only way that I can truly look good is by feeling good about myself and feeling happy. And, you know, I'm like, oh, well, if I don't feel super good about myself today, that's okay. What do I need to do today? Well, today I think I'm just going to rest and watch a movie. And maybe I can do like a little bit of a floor workout if that feels like better, you know, just to get myself moving. But yeah, just treating myself with the utmost like care and love, like I'm kind of learning how to have a relationship with myself. And I'm learning, like, you know, if I was dating myself, what would I like to do to make myself feel better? Which I think is hard to do. Mm-hmm. First of all, that's like a very weird form of self-love that I'm still getting used to, of like the whole date yourself aspect. I've never really understood that up until just knowing like, what are my wants in the moment and like long-term goals? How can I work towards those in the moment? I'm really happy with myself now. Like my transition is, you know, that is what it is. I just exist now. There is like no transition. I might continue to change as a person as I age, like everybody continues to change and age, but like I'm happy. I like my body. I'm excited to see how I will age and grow into an old person. I never expected to be an old person, let alone an old man, so that'll be exciting to see. I don't know. And I just trying to fall in love with the moments. I also live by this like mentality that every day is a day to look cute because you don't know when it'll be your last day. So, like, if you're ever questioning wearing, like, an outfit, or you have, like, this jacket or the shirt and it, or, like, this dress, and you're just like, I have to save this for a special moment. Like, don't do that. Wear it. Wear it when you want, when you feel, like, good, because you don't know, like, what'll happen in the future. So just try to do the best to make a point every day to, like, feel good and feel happy about yourself, to live the things that you want in the moment. Don't hold out for them for the future, and don't hold on to them in the past. Just, like, bring stuff into your life in the moment, if that's what you need. Mm-hmm. If you love that cute dress that you want to wear it in this moment. Like, if it's a good sunny day outside, you don't have to go to the fucking Ritz to wear an extravagant outfit. Like, make that moment for yourself, because that's where you're going to feel good. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yes.
Just, yeah, I don't know.
No, so well said. I love all of that. And it's so great to hear the contrast in what you shared there, because as you talked about your early years in the modeling industry, something that I kept thinking was that it sounds like you had so little for yourself. You know, certain things like doing MMA was something that you really enjoyed and really connected with and felt very you, and yet you weren't allowed to continue it. And it sounds like you found that really nice balance now of living your dream job, being the person that you wanted to be, and, you know, having space within that for so many things that feel very you. That's, like, a lot of what I was hearing in that description right now. So, yeah, good on you.
Thank you. It's definitely developed to that point. If I have to wear a tuxedo for a job, I'll wear it for a job. But if I'm expected to wear a tuxedo every day of my goddamn life, I will go insane. So, and, you know, no one's actually expecting that. That's just the industry just trying to create its, like, personas and stuff. But at the end of the day, people are in charge of themselves. And, you know, if there's, like, aspiring models and stuff, like, you may want to do everything that your agency is telling you to do because they've worked with all of the models for so long and they know everything. But the true, like, pioneers in modeling, the people that are truly changing things, and just from, like, my friends and the people that I've met and watching, like, history in and of itself, it's never the model that listened to everyone's advice.
Yeah.
It's never the model that listened to everything everybody told them to do, you know?
Yeah.
Modeling is always, it's growing as well, and it wants to hear from the younger generations and how the younger generations are going to be changing it and inspiring it. That's the whole point. We don't have to keep up tradition. I don't think that's the point of fashion. Mm-hmm. And, like, the future and the now.
Definitely. Fashion is about reinvention. I agree. And on that point, we will wrap up there. So if people want to find you online, you've got a great Instagram, which is a real snapshot into your life. Anything else you want to plug as well?
Oh, yes. Well, I actually literally just use Instagram as social media at this point in my life. And I made a TikTok, but that's because my mom said if I didn't make a TikTok, she was going to make one for me. So I made a TikTok and I don't use it. But yeah, Castle the Goat Lord, all underscores. That's it. That's all I use. My mom definitely made, like, a website for me when I was younger. And, like, that's still, like, I don't do anything with that, but she still updates it every now and then.
Oh, it's actually, that's pretty lovely. Cute. I did totally wonder tell. About it. Yeah, because I thought it was a fan that had done
totally
it.
You can totally tell it's written by my mom, too, just how she, like, writes everything. But yeah, she totally made that a website.
That's so cute. I love it. I'd also give a plug to, there's a video you did talking about cosplay that people can find by just Googling your name. And I found that fascinating as well.
Yeah, the one for W Magazine. Yeah. Cosplay is wonderful. I really suggest people getting into it if they just want to experience being somebody that they're not and play with that. That fucking helped me so much. If I didn't have cosplay, it would have taken me so much longer to figure out who I was.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good. I think we should all have ways to play with being other people, whether that's acting, whether that's drag. There's so many ways to do it. So we will wrap up there. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Bobby. And I think, like, other people that are in this room, thank y'all for having me. And I appreciate it. And I hope you have a beautiful night. Yeah.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.